thanks to Kevin for the introduction. I must say from the beginning that when I was preparing for this talk and I looked at my title again, I think I promised too much. So I'm going to be leaving out the UK part and focus more on the Singapore and Nepal connection. And to start us off, a background on the project. This is a project which I wanted to focus on the migrant experiences of former Gurkhas and their families as well. And the three main countries that I've been starting research on will be the UK, namely London and Winchester, and Nepal, that will be Kathmandu and Pokhara, as well as Singapore. So in terms of the field work, there are the different sources of data that I've been collecting along the way. Archival work has been done in the British Library, as well as the National Archives in Kew, and also the Winchester Gurkha Museum. There's also a Gurkha Museum in Pokhara. And apart from archival work, I've also been looking at autobiographies that are written by former British officers, a couple of them ex-Gurkhas, but some of them are written in Nepali, for which I don't speak the language yet. So that's going to be a disadvantage. And I've also obviously conducted narrative interviews with both ex-Gurkhas, their wives, as well as their children, whom are called in Nepali Banji and Banja, Banji for female and Banja for male. And the final set of data that I'm looking at would be military documents as well. So some of the preliminary themes that I've been thinking about looking at these different sources of data would be the way in which they narrate their experiences of work as a Gurkha, in terms of the different hierarchy in the British Army as well as in the Singapore Police Force. But more importantly for today's talk, I wanted to explore the different notions of belonging as well as the idea of home. Given their migrational background. And connected to belonging and notions of home would be the other issues of citizenship, as well as various other rights. So for today's paper, I'm looking at ex-Gurkhas who worked in the SPF, as well as their children, and I want to tease out these various dynamics based on recent work, and to look at the experiences, as well as expectations of post and home cities. A quick background about the SPF in Singapore, which was formed in 1949, and at present it's estimated that there are about 2,000 Gurkhas serving in the force. There is a compulsory retirement age at 45 or upon the completion of just less than shy of 30 years of service, and the recruitment age is between 17 and a half years old to 21. But what happens when the Gurkha serviceman has to retire is that the children's stay in Singapore is also curtailed. It is mandatory for the whole Gurkha family to return to Nepal. Whether the child is pursuing education halfway through or not, he or she has to go back to Nepal. So when we have this regulation in Singapore, I would want to question then, what is the consequence on different attachments or sentiments of place? What are the different impacts on social ties as well as the sense of belonging? What does it mean to return to Nepal for the different generations, be it the ex-Gurkhas, their wives, or the Banji Banja? How do the children adapt to life in Nepal? What kinds of sociocultural adjustments do they undergo? These are some of the conceptual ideas that I've been playing with for this paper, is to, first of all, distinguish between belonging as well as the politics of belonging. And in order to arrive at the distinction, I want to first analyze the narratives from the ex-Gurkhas and their families in order to empirically document what belonging is about. In the next section, then, I want to analyze the politics of belonging in relation to organizational efforts by two groups in Pokhara to examine each of their community-centered endeavors. So if you want to quickly think about belonging, it does point to tangible dimensions like attachment, notions of home, etc. But apart from belonging being under research in the larger literature of migration, and particularly for the Gurkha topic, I also attune to the idea of multiple belongings, as well as how there are shifting sentiments of belonging. And one can both belong and not belong at the same time. Then comes to the other part on the politics of belonging, and that is connected to collectives in particular ways. I would argue later on and show that the politics of belonging does throw light on belonging as a resource to be mobilized, and that has to be contextualized within the different conditions of employment and residence that the Gurkhas are facing. Another conceptual deliberation that I'm looking at would be the idea of return migration. Now, as much as the ex-Gurkhas and their wives are returning to Nepal, which is their country of origin, this idea of return migration does not apply to the children because they were born and bred in Singapore. Their idea of Nepal is but a place where they visit from time to time to reconnect with their relatives or other extended family members who have not had the opportunity to come to Singapore per se. So the children are not really returning to Nepal, and this would have bearings on how they relate to and adjust to living in Nepal after having spent almost two decades of their lives overseas as Singaporean-born Nepalese. So this idea of return migration would be more applicable for Gurkhas and their wives than the children themselves. I therefore ask, so what is the significance of return for both generations, given the different linguistic, cultural, and national backgrounds? To start us off with how to empirically realize or document belonging, you could perhaps think of markers of belonging, where it points to the different knowledges, different practices or ways of life that one acquires and sustains or recollects within particular urban settings. And here, food is a recurrent index that connotes one sense of belonging because of familiarity, because of comfort as well. The first instance of carrot cake refers to carrot cake that is sold in hawk centers and not with reference to the Western sweet carrot cake. And the second instance, we are looking at how this respondent misses both Singaporean and Nepali food. And that is also the part of process of migration and return migration as well. So it's quite evident that gastronomy does reflect the desire to reconnect memories and objects. That therefore signifies the process of incorporating the nation into everyday life. The yearn for Singaporean cuisine does represent a subjective identification of the country. There is a sense of place belongingness, if you like, to borrow from Anton Zisch. Other markers of belonging or indicators of belonging to the objects, or what could be termed as the materiality of belonging. The picture that you see here is taken from an ex-Gurkha's home in Kathmandu. You see, when they are recruited as Gurkhas in Singapore, when they go back to Nepal for visits, they will start to invest in land. They will start to build three-story houses, which puts my four-room HDB flat to shame. And what is clear in terms of how they've designed and decorated their homes are all these indicators of Singapore and their memories of Singapore.
So the
two jade things that you see guarding the television is what is called the merlion. It's not an English word. It's a mythical creature. It is a tourist symbol of Singapore that was created in 1967 by the Singapore Tourism Board. Because Singapore is so young as a nation, we needed to cling on to an imagination for tourist marketing. So it is a half fish, a half lion figure, hence merlion, that is connected to the myth of early Singapore. It is used as a mascot, as a national personification of Singapore. Fish refers to Singapore's origin as a fishing village. Lion refers to Singapore's original name, Singapura, or Lion City. Another marker or object of belonging. Another ex-Gurkha, his house is also built in Kathmandu, brings me to the rooftop of a three-story house, and he proudly points to me the solar panel. The symbol that you see there, again, is a reminder of Singapore's identity. And so all these markers do connote their sense of not just belonging and identification with the nation, but also the trust in the products of the nation to save. Other markers of belonging, if we break down further based on what my respondents have shared, comprises the confidence to say that they are so attuned to being able to recite their national pledge. That's the Banji Banja, the children of Gurkhas. They are able to sing the national anthem of Singapore, but not that of Nepal. They know that National Day in Singapore is 9th of August. They're not sure of what's the national day in Nepal. Right, which is fairly recent in any case, if one follows the politics of Nepal. So respondents are more aware of important dates of Singapore than in Nepal, and it does really does show the sense of connectedness that they share between Nepal and Singapore. There's also groups that are formed amongst the children of Gurkha, such as Malayan Club, again a reference to mythical creature that you saw earlier. Another club that they form is what they call Makan Sutra. For those who are aware, Singapore is a food paradise, apparently. And Makan Sutra is a book guide that tells us where to get the best foods across the island. So for Makan Sutra, what they do is that a group of bungees, female children of Gurkhas, they got together and they are cooking foods that can be found in Singapore, your nasi lemak, your curry puff, your chicken rice, and they sell it for a certain token of money, and they say it makes them happy because it gets together to remind them of Singapore. So again, gastronomy comes back as an important marker or index of belonging. So to quickly sum up these different markers of belonging, the examples do point to meaningful attachments that are formed not only through human-focused social interaction, but relationships with places, with objects, and with ideas. And these also point to affective aspects of belonging, as well as how these do carry emotional valence for informants. And that would also connect to what Brubaker argues as everyday membership practices of identification. Now, I've labored quite a bit on belonging, then what about on not belonging? Manisha, whom you see here, now she returned to Nepal at the age of 16 after completing her O-levels here. She's currently a guest relations officer in one of the top hotels in Kathmandu. And the narrative here is actually a recollection of her first impressions of when she returned to Nepal. And it does indicate a sense of disjuncture, right, from the social mores or norms that she was socialized with in Singapore, about Singapore being a fine city that you don't litter randomly. And she says that she thus faced the different cultural and perceptual frameworks in her experience of return migration, because I've never really done that in my whole life, as she mentions. And she also talks about not being able to relate to her Nepali friends who've never had the opportunity to experience Singapore. And these reveal the different social cultural scripts that she and her Nepali friends are brought up with, and in the process thus amplify her sense of belonging more to Singapore and of not belonging to Nepal, arising from the awkwardness. From belonging and not belonging, I want to talk a bit about shifts in belonging, and one can pinpoint belonging and otherwise as an identity project that encompasses both struggles and success that are involved in one's relocation to a homeland, however one defines that. And this account is arose from Manisha, who has by now spent about 4 to 5 years back in Nepal, and she has gone through different shifts in her sentiments of belonging, and she had gradually gotten used to life in Singapore, but of course there's always a smile on her face when I talk to her about Singapore and what she misses in this country. Now, then that brings me to this idea of simultaneous belonging. There's something that happens, as I've emboldened it in this narrative. She's referring to the Olympics, recent Olympics, that Singapore's won some medals, or that Singapore's National Day is coming. So when there are all these events that she's heard of or is reminded of, then she feels now a sense of felt membership to Singapore. And therefore, one might perhaps argue that belonging and not belonging do form two sides of the same coin. Probably another way in which to capture different sentiments of belonging, or otherwise to give a phrase of neither here nor there. And this is the narrative from Manisha's mother. As she says, because she spent almost 2 decades in Singapore, and then she really questions her own place of origin. Did they really leave Singapore, or did they leave Nepal? So for Manisha's mother, then, there appears to be a sense of displacement from belonging to Nepal, arising from having spent many years in Singapore, and therefore this is probably another way to think about shifts in sentiments of belonging, where she feels neither here nor there. The second part of my paper deals with the politics of belonging, and simply put, I question what is at stake when one claims to belong or not belong to a particular country. And there are 2 ways to examine the politics of belonging, the first of which is to ask how claims to belonging have been projected, first and foremost, and then to come to the query of what is actually at stake, if claims to belonging have been put forward. This is akin to what Yuval Davis calls the valuing and judging of belonging in terms of measuring and weighing the costs and benefits, and as well as the different entitlements that are employed. in the states that are involved, and therefore belonging can be interpreted as a resource to be mobilized. Now what you see here are two groups of societies that have been formed, and of course I'm using very crass pseudonyms, pardon that, for the Everest Association and Annapurna Community. And these two associations are formed in Pokhara. Everest Association aims to request certain items from the Singapore government, which I've enumerated, the Nature 7 as they call it, whereas for the Annapurna community, they proclaim to want to contribute to the Nepali Gurkha community in their post-retirement years. The seven requests that you see for the Everest Association were crafted on the basis of rights to belonging, which thereby engender these claims. For instance, the chairperson of Everest Association tells me, I quote, "We spent half our lives there," with reference to Singapore. "We serve, surviving with a pension given by the Singapore government. Where can we go to request? We are not serving the government of Nepal. We were serving Singapore, so we should request for these items." I think morally, that should not be a problem. So all these claims have been made on the moral grounds of their service as well as their sacrifice. They want to ask for a review of the pension because apparently pension rates haven't been moderated according to inflation rates. In terms of the permanent residency for children, they argue that, look, our children are born and bred in Singapore, they can speak fluent English, they are very well versed in the educational system. They are treated by the Nepali government like aliens. They have nowhere else to go but to remain in Singapore. Let's make it an option for them. Right? So to add all these items together, what is at stake in the politics of belonging does have to do with securing both educational and economic stability as well. To give you an idea of what the Annapurna community has done, a couple of photographs here, Savings and Credit Cooperative. So the chairperson of Annapurna community says, "This is our country, we take the challenge, try to do something. We can prove that we have other ways to contribute to this country, which is Nepal." So Gurkhas, as well as retired Gurkhas, may be shareholders of the four institutes that are shown there. Another endeavor would be a grocery shop, and there are about 128 shareholders. What struck me as interesting, the grocery shop would be the display of all the different symbols of different Gurkha regiments there. Another initiative would be the Gurkhali radio station. Apart from providing news, the chairperson of the Annapurna community is also the host of a one-hour weekly program where he interviews ex-Gurkhas to ask about their experiences. And this is where the Gurkha community can go to buy jewelry and get a discount when they plan weddings. But of course, this jewelry shop also serves the local non-Gurkha community. So to sum up for these four institutes under the Annapurna community, belonging as performed after return migration does also mean the re-establishment of boundaries when one is back. Now, what do I mean by that? As return migrants, here I'm talking about the ex-Gurkhas, they have also changed in terms of their cultural and social frameworks that they have been exposed to. So they do make a distinction between them as Gurkha migrants versus the local Nepali who did not become recruited as Gurkhas. So the chairperson tells me that he does not trust the local Nepali. So he manages these four institutes for the Gurkha community exclusively. That brings me to my conclusion. I've tried to explore what migration and return migration mean for different generations of Gurkhas and their families, vis-a-vis different conceptual deliberations on belonging, not belonging, shifts of belonging, and the politics of belonging. And there's also a need to have different understandings and interpretations of what is the place of origin, what does return migration actually mean to different groups of informants, and of course, what does belonging actually imply? Now, perhaps one point to take away is that when I talk about return migration, that does not mark the end of the migration cycle. It instead constitutes one stage in the migration process. What do I mean by that? Going back to one of the respondents, Manisha, she says that although she has found a job that she likes in Kathmandu, she may also seek employment overseas or further education overseas. Another Bungie, she said that she has recently gotten married to her husband and has just relocated to London. So since return migration has been problematized as such, it remains to be seen as to whether senses of belonging may take on different meanings or permutations across a range of post-origin contexts for both ex-Gurkhas and their families. Thank you.